94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. It's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
Hello, Charlottesville. Welcome along to another edition of Blokes on the Bench. I'm Andy.
Alex.
Mark.
Daniel.
And Wayne.
And Christian.
Everyone's kind of looking at each other. Should I introduce myself first?
You, me.
All right, so let's crack on. You had mentioned something, Christian, on the text service. You wanted to say a few words first about somebody that passed away.
Yeah, thanks. Cyril Regis passed away this week, West Brom legend who had to combat a lot of racism from the stands back in his glory days, was a real trailblazer and did it with class and dignity. It was really great to see the Premier League honor his legacy this week. All players wore armbands, and there were a minute silence before all matches, which, again, I find in England that the level of silence that comes from the stadiums is just... It's deafening how quiet it is. I don't know that I think the American crowd does it as well, but it was really a touching thing to see. And reading more about what he dealt with as a player and what players still to this day have to deal with, I mean, it's just what people are doing to other people, it's just wrong. And for a guy like this to handle it back in the day with class is such a great story.
Did you catch the clip? It was going around, it was circulating Facebook. It was Dion Dublin, I believe, on Match of the Day. Talking about how he looked up to him and like he broke down on Match of the Day. And
I saw that clip go around. I did see that.
That was like,
yeah,
that had a tear in my eye. So, but yeah, obviously massive respect. What he died young. He was only 50
only
something.
59, I believe.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tragic.
And just I had written down a quote from his autobiography, and I didn't read it, but I found this, and I thought that this was really something that hit home. He said, "Through the reply of consistent perseverance and performance, people's minds were changed." And I find football to be, the beautiful game, and it does bring people together across all nations, across all religions, across all colors. And if you can't get on board with that, then maybe there's another planet you should be on, because you know, we all got to get along, and football is a great way to get along.
I don't know how much of an expert you might be on this subject, but do you think FIFA is doing enough to combat racism? Because we always see the stamp out racism signs.
Definitely not. Not even close.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question to answer, because are they trying? Yes, they're trying. How much that actually succeeds? You know, it's up to the supporters' hearts to be changed, and you can only change if you want to be changed, and I think there's just too far many people who don't want to change.
But there's the punishment doesn't really align with what they're trying to make it out to be. And I'm not saying that it's obviously it's the right cause. None of us are for that. But a lot of times you'll hear about racist chants, bananas being thrown at players, just crazy stuff like that. And the fines, the bans are minimal. At worst, you'll see a team play with no home crowd. Mm-hmm. You don't see teams losing points. You need to affect them where it matters. You don't see teams not getting into the World Cup, things like that, because that's the only way you're going to affect the fans. Sadly, if you know, in a lot of like Eastern European countries or some of the worst.
I think that's the one of the points there, because if you look at the Kick It Out campaign in England, in the Premiership, that's, you know, it's gained traction over the years. They were the bastions of the sport. You know, black players from the 70s and 80s. John Barnes was another one that suffered terribly and you know, went through it and came out on top. But if you consider, as you said, the Russia, a lot of the Eastern Bloc countries, Turkey as well, there's countries that are a long way back in fighting communism. Yeah. And FIFA have got to, you know, they're fighting on all levels to try and tackle racism, because it is truly an international sport, biggest one in the world, isn't it?
You know? And sometimes it's not just people being racist against the away team. In Italy, at the last couple World Cups ago, it was for Balotelli.
That's
Italian
what I was just
going
to say.
Fans were going, throwing bananas at their own players. It's crazy. You don't... We in the U.S., to a degree, we've gotten past that. If things are much better here for the most part. There's still obviously injustice and so on. But you go to a game, you're going to see black players. No one even thinks twice. Mm-hmm. But it's you can't take it for granted.
Well, one of the things in England was the technology, the facial recognition, right. The desire for the clubs to just not have ban.
Yeah, and that was hooliganism as well.
That's right. Yeah, and but that degree of money and technology is not available throughout other parts of Europe, where you're seeing more problems. You know, it's more difficult to contain.
Win. I was just about to point out though, this happened recently at Liverpool, didn't it? It was racist chants at one of your younger players. I think it was
Brewster. Yeah. Yeah, the young lad that was injured last weekend in that under 23 game. He fell awkwardly and he got stretchered off. He was the fella that's got the golden boot in the World Cup in India. He was there was a big. Where was it? I think it might. It was when we went. I can't remember the game, but. They shadowed the first team in one of the previous rounds. I can't remember where they were. Was it the Russia?
It was Russia.
It was Moscow.
It brought up a whole lot of issues because, it's fit. Russia is well known for not only racism but homophobia. You know, all these things that are going to be big issues if FIFA don't.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Is the club? It's got to be stronger now because we're 150 days from the World Cup, so.
And look what happened to the last European Championships, Russia. All the hooliganism in the grounds. You know, they all blacked their faces up and.
The thing that,
got away with
we remember from the Euro Cup is obviously there was some great play, but the Russian fans were crazy. I mean, it's like MMA, get in a big group, they're the ultras, they call them. And they don't even drink alcohol. They don't even care. Cut off the alcohol sales. That's what you used to do to the English, to the hooligans, and that would affect things. The Russians, they'll get their MMA gloves on, and they'll just go to town, and they're literally just going to beat you up for no good reason.
Right. Well, the cutting off the alcohol for an Englishman can have two effects. It can cause a riot as well as pacify them.
Are you worried, Wayne, about this summer? Like, hooliganism maybe ruining English fans
for sure.
Being up for a fight? You know?
There's a possibility. Of course, there's always that concern with the English. But again, the technology and the desire to get that out of the game has been effective. You know, the passports just get taken; they lose their passports.
Yeah, but I find that it's more of nowadays. It's more before the game, after the game. It's less in the grounds.
Unless you're a Russian fan.
Yeah, which was crazy scenes if you saw.
I'm worried. I'm worried more about not necessarily just English fans going over there, but just generally how the Russians are going to contain and host these games it's going to be a new.
I'm going to be.
There will be clashes. There will be clashes. Yeah, it's guaranteed. The question is going to be, as Wayne's asking, how are officials in Russia going to deal with it, and what's going to be the aftermath of that? Because it's going
to
happen.
We'll see whether or not FIFA has any bite to the kick it out campaign. Because I mean, I think that at least I'm a skeptic. And I would love to be proven wrong. And obviously, I don't want to see it. But if something horrible does happen, I want to see some legitimate reaction, including which they were talking about in the Euro Cup, was literally kicking Russia out of the Euro Cup.
Yeah. I mean,
so that may need to happen in the World Cup. I'm not saying Russia.
That fizzled away, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, well, they didn't make it.
That with them hosting the World Cup 2 years later, that the ramifications would have been too big.
Well, I mean, Russia's not in the Olympics and stuff like that. You know, it's like
that's
for drugs. But it's the idea is that the Russians are somewhat unhinged.
Well, there you brought up Balotelli, and in Andrea Pirlo's autobiography, there's like two or three pages in there he devotes to talking about Balotelli and about how misunderstood he is, and about people don't understand what he deals with on a daily basis as far as racism in the grounds, to the ground. I mean, everywhere. In Italy and everywhere he goes, but even in Italy, you know, with his countrymen. And it was, when I read it, it was just heartbreaking. And, you know, it changed the way I looked. It definitely changed the way I looked at Balotelli. But, I mean, it is. It's far too prevalent.
It happened to Montari not too long ago. I mean, there's, it happens every few months in Italy and other countries around the world.
Lazio has had big problems.
Wright Thompson from ESPN had a deep dive article 4 or 6 years ago about Mario Balotelli and what he deals with as an Italian person and how Italians do not view black people as Italians. And it was heartbreaking. To Daniel's point, I mean, it moved me. And again, I think football changes perspectives because you don't get the perspective of what it must be like to be someone like Mario Balotelli, unless you're a supporter and want to learn more about him and read about him, and you're like, wow, this is insane. It's not just some drunk idiot throwing a banana or making monkey noises. This affects this man in a way that I'll never understand. It's really heartbreaking.
Wow. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think what we all thing is that is it being in some ways I think it's dealt with better than perhaps maybe we deal with these issues in the United States and other sports, but there's so much more that could be done to, you know, to try and combat it. And as Christian pointed out, some of it is, you know, supporters' hearts and minds have to want to be changed also. But if they're not going to be, I mean, those people need to be banned. The clubs need to be punished. You know, the countries, the FAs need to be punished. Whatever has to be done.
Not saying America's the best at dealing with things, but could you imagine someone throwing a banana at an NFL or an NBA or any professional sporting event here in the United States? There'd be blood in the streets. It's just nuts.
Well, I mean, the Cardinals had issues 3 or 4 years ago, just before the playoffs or in the playoffs. The St. Louis Cardinals had issues, and there was a lot of controversy over whether or not that was handled. And, you know, I think it was outside the stadium before the game, maybe, but also inside the stadium. I mean, one thing I do appreciate about, because I'm all for this, is that English clubs especially are not afraid to use lifetime bans for various acts of, you know, bad behavior.
And that happened not too long ago with Jake Livermore, who's had quite the history, and who plays for West Brom, and his son died.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Awful. To get over it, he was on cocaine. He actually had a positive test for cocaine. They actually didn't punish him because of the situation. And then that was a few years ago. And then recently there was a fan, and I forget where it was.
It was like 2 weeks ago, I think.
West Ham.
It was against West Ham.
Oh, that's right. So yes, London, that's where it was,
And a fan said something to him.
About his son.
Exactly. And he reacted negatively.
They had to stop him from going into the crowd.
Exactly.
He almost did
Cantona, whatever, a few weeks ago, right?
But I think, on a serious note, though, the FA really need to realize that the Premier League, now being a global brand, need to realize that this reflects on British culture, you know, and just come down on it. Forget what the FIFA says. FA are in charge of one of the greatest sporting leagues in the world.
It's not even the fact that it's the greatest sporting league in the world. It's the most financially impactful league.
Right.
And that money's always going to speak higher than our ethics or our what we, you know, if money starts to get pulled because behavior is bad, that changes everything. I think getting, and this is a whole bigger deep dive, in changing supporter culture over in England primarily with the stands, that changed the opportunity for television to broadcast it and for the success of the Premier League overall. Again, much deeper thought process going into that than we're going to get into today. But it's good to get back to where Alex was. It's good what FIFA's trying to do. But yes, way more needs to be done. And Russia will be the
litmus test.
The litmus test, really. Of all this.
Yeah. We do need to move on to the results. So, but this is something that we need to keep talking about. So, Brighton versus Chelsea was the opener of the weekend. Chelsea giving them a good hiding. 4-0.
Yeah, that game was over fast.
Pulled Brighton's pants down.
It was like they got 3 in 20 minutes or something, 25 minutes.
No, they had 2 within the first 6 minutes. And the next 2 came in the last 15 minutes or so.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah. But Brighton has really fallen off a cliff of late. You were talking about this.
They're in trouble.
They're in serious trouble. They're in the drop zone or very close to it. In terms of, if you look at their goals that they're, like, whether or not they're scoring.
They're not.
They're not. That's the problem.
They're not
problem.
At all.
Like basically,
they're sitting in 16th.
if it's not a 0-0 draw, they're in deep trouble, and they're not really scoring. So if you continue to do this, you are going to go down, and it looks like they're going to go down. I mean,
Stoke just kind of pulled one out, and they're 1 point beneath or above even Southampton, who are also in trouble, obviously. They're sitting in the relegation zone.
As bad as Brighton were, Chelsea were that much better. Eden Hazard showed flashes again of how good he can be when it's his day. He scored his 100th career goal in this match, and he's definitely getting himself primed up again. We're going to probably talk more and more about the World Cup every week we see each other, but seeing that Belgian start to get into form, it's cool to see.
What are our views on Conte? Is he hanging around?
No.
No.
And but why?
I don't know why. I don't know why, but I think we talked about this a little bit on the text message. The fact that Chelsea isn't really spending, is that an indicator that he won't be back? Because you don't want to bring in players for a coach who's leaving.
You mean so, Peter Crouch isn't going to keep Conte at Chelsea? Come on.
The memes of the Peter Crouch thing are hilarious on Twitter.
Andy Carroll wasn't?
Yeah, Andy Carroll. Yeah, Andy Carroll. I mean, come on. Chelsea, come
what
on.
What is Mo doing to him?
I'm kidding. The Scousers are loving this. I mean, every time we offload somebody, even if it's via a few other teams, to Chelsea, they something implodes.
There is something uncharacteristic.
Thinking about
this.
Torres
this is
as well.
Torres is the big one, right?
Yeah. We got a lot of money for him. That was nice.
Yeah, it was the biggest sale ever in Premier League history.
Yeah, he fell off, didn't he, when he went to Chelsea. But yeah, it's funny,
except
isn't
for
it?
That, except for that one game where Gerrard slipped. Remember that?
Oh, thanks for bringing that one up.
Slippy G. Yeah. It's funny, though. They were talking about, I guess, Peter Crouch apparently lives, like, steps from Chelsea's ground, and he travels to Stoke all the time. It takes him like 3 or 4 hours or whatever, and I guess he was a Chelsea ball boy and like all this other stuff. So that's where some people think that's kind of why they threw it out there, because he has a Chelsea connection. But there's no way he's going to Chelsea.
It doesn't make 36. Any sense.
36.
Yeah, he's
older than a lot of us, right? Yeah.
Not old.
Not I.
All right, guys. One more thing. I heard recently, this is ridiculous, that Conte might become the Italian manager again and Chelsea and do both of them. I don't know how you would ever do that. That's way too much stress.
I think he can do it. He did it.
He did it once before. He did it before. Yes, he was. Yeah, he was. He was the Italian manager and Juventus at the same time.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Italian team fell apart, and the manager had to go into hiding. So, I mean, you know, it could happen.
No, not Conte, the other manager.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
I hate in FIFA when you're playing career mode and you know you're managing your club and your agent keeps approaching you with international jobs. I'm like, I'm barely hanging on here at my club that I'm currently running. I don't want both jobs.
Yeah, because that's the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it isn't.
So you think he's out in the summer then, Conte? He's gone.
Yeah, I think
But if
leave.
He leaves, do you think it's him leaving or Chelsea saying goodbye?
Goodbye. Yeah.
The thing that obviously I'm not there, but in pundits talking about it and stuff, people seem to think that Conte doesn't particularly, he doesn't like being away from Italy. Apparently he goes home all the time. He goes back to Italy all the time, and he doesn't permanently live in London, and you know, so I think it could just be a comfort level thing where he just doesn't want to be in England anymore.
But you can make the same argument about a lot of English players. They don't leave England. They feel very comfortable in their native land, and that there's nothing wrong with that at all. But at the same time, he took the job in London.
Yeah,
you've got to be prepared to live there and do everything.
Yeah,
if it's like Mo in a hotel.
which he does. Mo lives in
a motel. All right.
the motel.
With that, guys, it's 20 past 6. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. And everyone's chitter chattering. Get your headphones on, lads. Get your headphones on.
Sorry.
All right. So West Ham versus Bournemouth.
Chicharito.
Chicharito.
Just talking about Mexico, and there's Chicharito popping up in the box.
That's one of my favorite nicknames.
Yeah.
That was a crazy game. Like, there was not much scoring at all until about the 70-something-ith minute. Ryan Fraser gets a nice goal on a pass from Stanislas. And then literally, if you're watching the game, they're still showing highlights of the goal that was just scored. And Chicharito is putting it in the back of the net. I mean, like, it was that quick. It was within 30 seconds after the goal. I mean, it was unbelievable how quickly it was.
Not much more to say about this match.
All right. Well, and Stoke versus Huddersfield, 2-0 to Stoke.
My highlight in that match was Paul Lambert celebrating the goal. That's about it.
Yeah, Paul Lambert, the new manager of Stoke, exactly, gets off to a great start, 2-0. Both goals, he was celebrating like he won the World Cup.
And that tracksuit was fantastic. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah. All right, was there anything else to that game as well?
I mean, just seeing Stoke, the potential Stoke have got. I saw them, I think I mentioned, against Burnley about 3 weeks ago, and is it Shaqiri? I always forget his name wrong.
Shaqiri,
yeah, he's just so strong and fast and smart the way he reads the game.
Thighs.
He's brilliant to watch.
That's Mark's standard. Yeah.
Every time
we talk about Shaqiri, yeah.
But Lambert's got, he's got a good squad of players.
I thought really, they've always bought well. Mark Hughes spent a lot of money at Stoke, and it may have been too much, and he's not the right manager for it, but there's quality at Stoke. I'm not saying they're winning the Premier League anytime soon or finishing top six, but I think they're safe, and hopefully Paul Lambert sees them through.
Yeah, and so this game, I thought, was disappointing if you're a Huddersfield fan, because I thought the first goal was basically a gift. It was on a counterattack, and if you saw Joe Allen just ran his butt off from midfield on this counter, and a Huddersfield player, Van La Parra, he's jogging his way up there. Joe Allen had no business scoring the first goal, and he came out of nowhere to score it. It was really impressive.
Lovely.
And then the second goal was just pure class. I mean, Choupo-Moting from the midfield passes up to Shaqiri with a nice back heel to Diouf, who had the assist on the first one. He was the man of the match in my eyes, and Lambert gets off to a 2-0 victory and gets 3 points in his first game for Stoke at home. You know, good for him.
Right. So Leicester City played Watford, 2-0 to Leicester City.
Oh, Watford.
And it's Watford. Hard not to talk about this game without saying what happened today, which is Marco Silva out.
What?
Sacked.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
This is exclusive.
Where were you, man? Come on.
I was working, guys. I got a job.
I thought we talked about this on the text.
Read the text messages. Come on.
It was buried in the hundreds of
text messages.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are on Do Not Disturb for me because I can't have it on at work.
Yeah, mine's, or just me ranting on about Sanchez all the time. Martin must drive you crazy.
Silva goes from what? Being worth $10 million to being sacked in a month and a half.
$10 million being Everton,
right. Everton wanted to pay $10 million for him.
The statement
Watford
that
said no.
Watford put out, they said there was an unwarranted approach, which I thought was very interesting. Unwarranted. Well, it was warranted. He was playing, Watford were like fifth, sixth in the league, playing really well. And any team has any right to come after a coach, or any player for that matter. I think it's screwed up to do it through the media and the methods they did.
Because, you know, like tapping players up. Look what happened with Southampton and Liverpool. You know, we got fined, had to make public apologies. So where's the difference there? Because it took his eye off the ball, arguably, because I'm honored to have been, and he's talking about another club. And being asked to go and join another club, you know, I can see why the directors at Watford were upset about that.
You have a job, and some other company says, you know what, this Wayne guy, he knows what he's doing. We're going to hire him.
It's unlikely. But good analogy.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, maybe I should use someone else. But no, but I mean, I think the idea is like, yay capitalism. You know, it's like this is what it's all about, and I think that the approach, now technically the way it works is that if, at least for players, I don't know how it works for managers, is that you cannot actually talk to the player. Now, of course, you can talk to their agent, no problem. But, you know, usually that doesn't taint the player or the coach in terms of how well they play. Also, Marco Silva had a fallout with Andy's boy, Troy Deeney, which was part of the reason he lost the locker room as a part of this. And so it wasn't purely the Everton approach, but it was the actions that happened afterwards. And so I think Silva's as much to blame as anybody. That said, we haven't even said the score of the game. Watford lost 2-0 here.
Yeah, it wasn't that close.
It wasn't that close, but the thing is that Watford are 10th in the league, and they're firing their manager.
Well,
Watford.
And maybe this goes to talk to the quality of the league this year. Watford had won 5 points of a possible 30 available over the past 10 matches. So clearly, they're not getting the job done. I thought what was really interesting in this is Jamie Vardy, after the match was over, I looked at the match stats. Jamie Vardy scored 10 goals this year on 17 shots on goal. That's an absurd accuracy level. I like to see his total shots taken this year, but 10 off of 17, I think that's a pretty good return. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's you could on probably, target. That's right, on target. You're not right. Factoring in the
no,
misses.
No, I'm saying it's on target. Yeah. No, that's the key part of the stat. That's what I'm trying to wonder what other strikers like a Harry Kane who take multiple shots but put a lot of it on goal.
Harry Kane leads the league in scoring by a crazy margin. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Feel free to pull it up. But it's like,
I'm surprised they're not like on your wall like at home.
Yeah, I'm surprised. what about the Andy Carroll comment?
Show us that tattoo.
Oh my goodness!
Go on.
It was the Sunday Supplement show from Sky back home. Somebody made
someone was really drunk.
That posted it.
Post it. No, it was crazy.
I posted it, and I'm still kind of laughing about it. I forget the name of the pundit, but
maybe that's good.
His name's not even worth mentioning because of the absurdity of what he said. That Andy Carroll is basically Harry Kane if he weren't hurt.
Right. If he was healthy. Yeah. If he was fit.
Well,
healthy,
I'm Harry Kane if I'm not. Kane. If he wasn't fat, you know, like.
If I was playing in the Premier League, had 9 million more percent talent, and I could put the ball on the goal, I'd be Harry Kane.
You
could qualify anything like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like Ronaldo, you know.
I'm Bill Gates, but without the money.
There is like this weird mythology around Andy Carroll, though. I mean, there really is. Like, it's odd. It's kind of cool, but it's weird.
I want to hear what Wayne has to say about Andy Carroll. How do you rate him?
Oh, big lummox. I mean, you know, we paid a load of money for him. And
the biggest
from the
North
East, so we couldn't understand him for a start. That was the hardest thing.
How much was it for him?
Oh, I don't know.
It was like 40 for him and 10 for the
million.
Man
it was Kenny Dalglish bought him. At the same time, in the brief tenure when he took over after the Gillett and Hicks messed up the club.
Andy Carroll had like a run of like maybe 5 or 6 good games, and all of a sudden he's the highest paid player.
Yeah,
it was a very odd, strange situation.
Yeah. And he did. It just didn't work out because most clubs that have a big target man up top. Liverpool is not one of those. You know, we've always
more
been
like a Stoke and like
or a Man United. You know. you've got them queued up. I'm surprised you haven't put a bid in for them. You know, you've got quite a few tall.
I knew this was going to happen when we brought the Liverpool fan on.
Well, what did you expect?
It's all love in the studio.
Fellaini is the Belgian Andy Carroll. Yeah, same thing.
With better hair.
Speaking of Belgium,
they both have pretty fabulous hair for different reasons. I think
the bald guys all are envious.
Daniel and I will speak the best towards
anybody.
We have David Silva now, so you know.
All right, let's move on.
Trying to look like their manager.
Let's just get away from the hair, and let's talk about Everton versus West Brom. Okay. Oh God, sorry.
I just wondered. We're talking about the top scorers, Harry Kane, because Mo Salah's got to be in with a shout. 17, but I think 21. You're right.
So, yeah, 21.
21 goals for Harry Kane.
We'll get to Kane soon enough, but his numbers coming into this game were just absurd. He was scoring a goal every 36 minutes, is what they were saying, since the Burnley match.
So Everton, West Brom?
Yeah. 1-1.
First of all, the West Brom goal was the pass to set up that goal. Oh, man, I could watch that pass all day. I mean, it was 25-30 yards outside of the right boot, curling over the back line play. I mean, I forget who scored the goal. Controls it with his chest.
Jay Rodriguez.
Yes.
But the pass brings from it down. Kovacic.
Oh, man. That pass was spectacular.
Are they going down, West Brom?
No.
You think
they're going to survive?
I hope they do, because if Wolves get in next year, which is looking more and more likely, there's going to be fireworks of a game. West Bromwich.
The highlight of this match, and it's not really a highlight, is James McCarthy's horror injury. Right. Everton
confirmed a freak injury.
Terrible. Everton confirmed a double leg break.
That's
just so.
Yeah, Rondon's going in to take a shot, and McCarthy comes in to block it, and
It looked harmless.
It didn't look bad. Yeah, like, and then Rondon's in tears.
Yeah, I mean, it was a play that happens, you know, looks pretty routine.
I remember playing football with the Army 30 years ago, and a fella broke his femur right next to me, and I was sick. Mm. You know, it's when actually being in the proximity of it, it's horrible, you know. And that fella, I felt for him. Both of them, you know.
Yeah, sure. And this game, I thought was... It was interesting how it was a draw in the end 1-1, how it all got drawn up. Oh, Theo Walcott, the ex-Arsenal man in his debut.
Thank God.
The Arsenal fans are happy to see him go. But he got an assist from his head. Mm-hmm. I was like, honestly, let's look. How much tape do you have to watch to see the last time he had an assist with his head?
Probably never.
There's not many stats associated with him generally.
And to go deeper dive on this.
He scored a lot of goals. It's just over 12 years, he didn't really score that many.
Everton put their first shot on goal 12. In the calendar year. We're at January 20, and they finally get a shot on goal in the Premier League. That's 3 or 4 matches. It really goes to show what Everton hasn't been able to do over the past few weeks. And talking back to Marco Silva and that you've got Big Sam there right now, if I'm Big Sam, I'm renting, I'm not buying, because I don't know what the contract was for him to come to Everton this year, but Marco Silva's probably bringing his really tight shirts to Merseyside this summer.
All right, guys. So the next game is Burnley versus Man United, 1-0 to Man
Match
United.
Of the week.
It wouldn't be... We can't not talk about the United game and not talk about the whole thing that's going on with Sanchez. So as of today, he was at Carrington all day today and had his medical, I believe, that was announced was going to be made in the next 24 hours. But people have been saying that for the last, 4 or 5 days.
I heard he left our team hotel at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And
said apparently, goodbye. Apparently he went with the team and then got a phone call and told the team goodbye.
Well, apparently that was a Wenger move of like, I'm going to put him in the hotel and kind of force your all's hand. And
but, I mean, listen.
I think that's a good move, you know?
Right.
Like, if you're trying to get top dollar for a player, you make every indication that this player is going to play, and he's in our long-term plans. If you are like, you know what, we'll keep him on the side, kind of like Aubameyang, you know?
I was going to say, unless you're Dortmund, then you just suspend him.
And yeah, you suspend him, but then it's like, you know what, his value goes down because you know you really don't want him anymore. Yeah. So you make every indication that you want him and that you're going to play him, and then the value goes up.
Right. And the other thing is, and I think this is a good, so many, if you go on Twitter, like United and Arsenal fans, I know they don't like each other, but they're all kind of bickering back and forward. Listen, I think this is a good deal for both clubs. Listen, Mkhitaryan, he obviously, when he joined United, he was very public about the fact that his father died at the age of 33 of a brain tumor, and that he was quoted as saying, you know, my father would be proud. No shame that he didn't make it as a United player. And I think that he should be looking at this as a new chapter. Arsenal are a big club. Maybe Wenger's got a bit more patience with him. They can bring him out. And I'm guilty.
Years old or something like that.
Well, Alexis Sanchez is 29.
Right.
No, but I'm fine with that. But my point on Mkhitaryan, though, is that his last season at Dortmund, and Christian, you're a Dortmund
incredible.
Fan, you know. Yeah, he had like 40 goals or something insane.
Well, and he started off this year at United as a really integral part of their attack.
I had him on my fantasy team. He was playing really well.
While Andy was saying that there's no shame in not making it as a United player, I think just falling out of favor with the manager
happens weekly with some random
everyone.
Player for no good reason.
So one question would be, such a talented player that proved himself at Dortmund, was he mismanaged?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anyway, the last thing about this for me is United do need a few decent players in, so it's good that Sanchez is going there.
But the interesting point about the mismanagement. So maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. You know, we're not there. But someone like Alexis Sanchez, who you can visibly see on the field how intense of a human being he is.
Mm.
Let's say Mourinho starts playing the mind games with him, which he does with everyone.
Oh, they gone.
So
that's not going
to
be healthy.
See, that's the thing that I think is going to be interesting to watch, is how Sanchez fits into the club and fits in with Mourinho. Because already we're hearing rumblings of
you know, I mean, he's the highest paid player in the Premier League now, and you're walking into that dressing room and Pogba's already there. Yeah, I mean,
Pogba's like, yo, pay me the same.
Right. That's actually nonsense. The story's not true. I heard the same thing, that he wants more. It's not true.
He should want
more. Well, but how wouldn't he want to be paid more? And this is the knife.
He may want to, but the story is not true. It was made up.
This is the knife that City's basically dodged, in that if Alexis Sanchez had come to Manchester City, he would have been the top paid player.
Right. But it would have upset the
younger players who are their futures tied to the club, who are going to want more money. Now that doesn't have to be a concern. It's a win for us on top of it.
Is he going to be a squad player, or who's he going to replace?
He's going to be a squad player.
Wait!
You're going to replace Martial,
highest paid player in Man United. He's going to be a squad player,
not a squad player.
Right. So this was a great conversation we were having. Who does he displace
Rashford
in the lineup
at the minute?
Well,
at the minute,
Rashford's still coming off the bench.
Yeah.
The consensus,
I think that maybe
he's got to play on the left. That's where he plays for Arsenal. He's going to play on the left.
The consensus.
That whoever plays on the left, he's replacing.
Yeah, Martial was the guy who played this week.
That was the consensus in the group, that Martial was going to be displaced. Martial is a young player with a great future ahead of him. United, you know, they're going to finish top four because they're a really good side. Right. Do you really want to disrupt this guy's development to bring in? I just have a hard time balancing.
And they paid so much for Martial, too.
Oh, so
they
much.
Paid more than right. they did for Sanchez.
Was it 30 something at
no,
that
I
time?
No, it was more than that with all the add-ons.
Yeah,
exactly. So. I mean, I think that it's short term gain, long term pain in here. I just don't think it's a good move overall. I think that yes, they'll get a lift this year, but they're not catching City.
Okay. Well, nobody is. So
that's neither here nor there. I just think that, and I've been banging on about this for months, is that it's Rashford, Martial, and Lukaku. Those front three for United can be so good. And disrupting it to bring in this guy who's got short-term value for sure is going to disrupt their long-term project. But Mourinho's not there long-term, so I guess it really is about the here and
so
there.
So is he cup-tied for the Champions League?
Yes. How can Alexis Sanchez be tied to Champions League?
You know, well, he's in Europa.
So
no,
he was
not.
In Europa,
correct.
So
he can play in the Champions League. That's what I heard.
So like,
yeah. Because Arsenal play on Thursdays.
Exactly.
Right.
Only once in the last 20 years. You should talk to this guy about Thursdays.
Well, it's going to be twice.
It's, yeah.
All right. Let's get back very quickly.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the match, because the match was fantastic. I don't know how many of you guys watched this match, but I thought
Burnley came out extremely physical. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised Mike Dean let them play.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see Pogba and other players getting visibly upset by the lack of fouls.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Right. I didn't particularly care for the first half, but yeah.
Okay, well, I'll leave it at that. Time is like 20 to 7. We'll be right back. All right, Christian, back to you.
So like I was saying, I thought this was the match of the weekend, mainly because it's this and City were the two matches I watched the entirety of. The goal by Martial, who looks to be heading to the bench, was gorgeous, but was set up by the effort of one Romelu Lukaku, who, if you're not going to score goals, you got to help the attack, and he totally did on that. And an interesting stat that came out of that was that he is the top assist man for strikers since like 2013-14 with 23 or 24 assists. So people are bagging on him for not scoring goals. That was a great example of what a big physical striker like Lukaku can do. He can help hold up the ball, let the attack flow, and then Martial with that pure venom shot on goal. Oh, so good. So good.
Anyone else?
No, it was a great, goal. What I thought was fascinating is watching Burnley, that we've seen all season setting up with seven in the back, defending, frustrating players, rarely attacking. They were free-flowing, attacking. They took the game to United, and they almost pulled it off.
Wayne, this goes to talk about Manchester City as well. You have to go after the big sides. If you're just going to sit back and defend, you're going to lose. Every time, you're going to lose. So if you come out and play expressive, you have your chance to win. And Burnley not only could have drawn the game, they could have won the game. And I thought it was just beautiful football, end-to-end stuff.
But here we are, you know, past over halfway through the season, and these teams that have got, they've all got a host of international players in them, you know, even the mid and lower table sides are kind of getting onto that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going, we're not going to sit back. Mm-hmm. We're going to get in and gig and press.
Look what Bristol City did to Manchester City. Look what Liverpool did. I mean, these teams had no fear and gave one of the best sides in Europe the biggest scares of the season, and Liverpool knocked them off their perch. So I loved seeing what Burnley did, and there's a lot of talk about some bigger sides coming in for some of their players now. Chelsea, again, being the rumor to come in and cash in on Burnley. But great match, really. I just enjoyed it from start to finish.
And one of the few teams in the Premiership, I think they've got 9 first-team starters that are English.
Mm. There you go.
An English team.
And the other guys are really good. Like Gudmundsson, Icelandic. I love that guy.
Yeah,
that guy.
Great name.
Gudmundsson? What about Badmundsson? It's the opposite. His alter ego.
To close on United, Michael Carrick this week announced his retirement.
He's going to be joining a training
room. Yeah, he's going to be part of the staff. He was in the supporter section there at Turf Moor, which I always love that when that happens, seeing the players amongst the supporters. Michael Carrick, to me, is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League and for Manchester United. He was just
Greggy,
such class.
Where are you?
Yeah, he had a heart problem, didn't he? I mean, that was touching.
He should have been the player of the year in 2013-14, the last year that you guys won the title. He was such a key factor in Manchester United winning the title. Such a great midfielder.
All right, we need to move on. Arsenal versus Crystal Palace. It's your boys.
Apparently, 4-1. He likes to eat ice cream in the middle of winter.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Was that on Instagram or Twitter or something? There was a photograph of him?
I don't know. He got sick and missed some matches.
All right, Mark, over to you.
Talk Arsenal.
I think we saw...
Mark's just kind of like pausing for a second.
Hold on.
Build up. I'm going to get some drum rolls ready for him.
Yeah.
I think Monreal coming back was huge, even though he didn't stay on the pitch the whole match. He'll be back.
He only had a goal and 2 assists. No,
we've missed him.
No, I'm
100%.
I was being sarcastic. I mean, like, he was your Alexis. He was this game was crazy. There was more goals scored on corners than I've ever seen probably in a game. I mean, there were like 4 goals on corners. Monreal looked legit.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been
a good player for us. Very consistent. You know, he's not the best player in the world, but I think what you saw in this game was a collectiveness. I think, obviously, Sanchez has been busting up the locker room. And I think you saw in this match that now with him leaving the team hotel, that was a great goal right
there. A
little
back pass by
Ozil. The backflip from Ozil.
Well, no, I think Lacazette was the one we were just seeing. Lacazette hadn't scored in, what, 9-10 games?
Yeah.
He needed to get on the score sheet. He needed to get on the
score sheet. Lack of threat. I have not heard that.
Talk Sport, there was well
Wait,
bad.
Who
and,
said that?
Well bad talk sport. And lack of threat. Nice.
Lack of threat and well bad.
Was that you, Wayne?
I didn't say a word.
Go on.
So, you sound so convincing.
Where do you see Arsenal now? Obviously, do you think it's with that? I mean, Aubameyang coming in. I mean, is that a summer move or is that January? Or what is up with that?
It's an Arsenal move, so who knows if it will happen or not. Working on the night move. Yeah. Mm. We're working on it. There's some positive news out there about, some of our executives flying to Germany, to go try to hammer out this deal. And I think it'd be great if we can get rid of Alexis. Have our problem become yours. Although
yes,
him and
he's
Mourinho,
been a very big problem for you.
Him and Mourinho are both psychotic enough to where they might get along.
Let's say you get Aubameyang. Where do you play him within the squad that you have today?
He starts.
Well, obviously he starts.
Lacazette's on the bench.
So you put Lacazette on the bench. You didn't play 2 up top? That was what I was trying to get at.
No. No, you.
So who do you play as wingers around him? Iwobi and Ozil?
Well, Ozil's going to play in the middle.
Exactly. Well, who are your, like...
So, Iwobi or somebody will play on the
right.
Don't
forget Mkhitaryan will be part of that.
Mkhitaryan, he's going to be on the left.
I honestly hope Mkhitaryan does well at Arsenal. I really do.
He will, and if we get Aubameyang, they're former teammates, so there
right.
won't take much
Perfect.
Time for that to
kind of
that
synergy to
happen.
To kind of right exactly. I think
I
it's a good deal
think
for
this
Arsenal.
Is a
this
very
is...
good deal for Arsenal.
Right.
And initially, I think Wenger was trying to go after Martial.
There was
also,
talk about that,
which
yes.
also would have been a good move for the future.
I could have seen
because,
Arsenal. I could have seen Martial at Arsenal. Yes,
Mkhitaryan, proven player. hasn't had the best run of it in England. He's shown signs of brilliance, but I think with the right
coaching
amount of, I mean, I'm not even like, he just needs to play.
But you know, but like, at United, real coaching, like, though, you don't get real coaching with Mourinho. You get mind games.
I thought you were going to make a Wenger stab there.
I was. Well, you know what? I think Wenger is a great player developer.
Yep.
I think he's extremely underrated in that regard. He obviously always buys young. I mean, there's if anyone wants to make a joke about Mourinho, or sorry, about Wenger, it's not about his ability to develop players. It's about his ability to win trophies and in the league. And,
no, he's won a lot of trophies.
And then ultimately, you know, can he actually, you know, build a squad that can win the league since, you know, the last 15 years or whatever it's been?
I think we're beyond that. I mean, my question, Mark, to you is concerning Arsenal and Wenger. There's been all this, you know, last two or three years, Wenger out and him stuttering and just being defiant. He's like one of these communist leaders, you know.
Holding on to
Mugabe.
He's
like Mugabe, isn't he? Holding on to the power.
Leave it to Wayne to just hit this right on the head.
No, but just to you like put a comparison with what happened, and I'm not doing my Liverpool beating on United, honestly. But what happened with
sticking out to both of us?
What happened with Ferguson when he left? There was this void, and there wasn't really a plan, and it took you 3 or 4 years of glee for us. But you know, it was a poorly managed transition, and this is going to be the same thing with Wenger.
And that's what I've been afraid of.
But then we're just talking about Conte. Oh, we're not. You know, there's no money available. Talking about Carroll coming in and all that, i.e. he's going, they're not going to give money to the new manager. Well, Wenger is, you know, in the market for big players now, suddenly, because he's won a few. So it's almost like he's going to be here next year as well. And I wondered, that's the question. Do you think he's going to continue next year as well?
He signed a two-year contract, so next year would be his last year of the contract.
Yeah, there have been rumors of Ancelotti already agreeing to a deal to come in the summer. But
why would Ancelotti take a project like Arsenal on? Arsenal need a young manager who's going to develop the younger players.
Marco Silva
and bring through.
Just kidding.
Possibly, I guess.
Well, maybe.
I don't see Ancelotti as a good fit at Arsenal.
I mean,
that's kind of the problem.
That's kind of the problem right now. Is like, who out there are replacements?
The Simeone talk will ramp back up, because there's talk about him not being happy at Atletico anymore.
But he's not going to come to Arsenal, and he doesn't play the kind of football that Arsenal fans have come to enjoy.
Is he plays like Mourinho plays. Park the bus, counterattack, very defensive-minded. It's pragmatic. It gets results. But is Arsenal really, are the fans going to accept that after Wenger, where it's wide open?
Sam Dyche would be a great Arsenal.
Hello, I'm Sam. All right, Arsenal.
Eating worms and...
Eating worms, yeah.
No, I mean, diet. I've said this on the show a couple times now. Like, I really wouldn't be opposed to, if things do continue to hit the fan this year, which they have, you know, maybe next year, like... Start grooming Robert Perez. Start grooming Dennis Bergkamp or Thierry Henry. Like, it's worked. I know Madrid's a bigger club. You know, Madrid has all this talent at their disposal. I understand that. But I think we're getting to a point now with managers that you're going to start to see more players that we have watched become actual managers.
And we didn't say it last week, but Ryan Giggs.
Yeah,
Welsh. Manager,
now he's the Welsh manager.
Well, of Wales.
Yeah.
The one thing I will
say...
The one thing I will say about Wenger, though, is when he leaves, that will be the end of an era.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's it. And I have this torn relationship with him, like, love-hate, because I can't stand when he whines and moans. But if you've ever actually listened to him talk in an interview, he obviously spent some time in Japan. Now, that's rubbed off, that kind of zen-like quality about him that... I could just listen to him talk all day, and I feel
the French Phil Jackson.
But once he's gone, you were saying, it's going to be a void there, because he's like Sir
his
Alex.
His parents owned a pub, so he grew up watching supporters watch their teams.
The perfect manager to come in for Arsenal after Wenger, and I hate to say this because it would be a loss to Manchester City, is Patrick Vieira. He's currently the New York City Football Club manager and has worked with the youth program there as well. I think that's the future of Arsenal personally.
And I would totally be if we can get that back.
Yeah,
that's what we have missed. We have missed a Vieira.
That relationship didn't end well, though, by all accounts.
All right, guys, we need to move on. Manchester City beat Newcastle 3-1.
I mean, to me, two things for this game. First of all, Zinchenko came in at left back and did a serviceable job. I think long term, he's Delph has more experience being converted to left back. I still can't believe I'm saying he's a good starting left back. I mean, Mendy's not coming back this year. Delph was good. Zinchenko is better than Danilo for the way Pep wants to play, so it's good to see Zinchenko do well. Now, the other thing is, Kuhn got his hat trick. That was nice. But, man, that run by Sané to set up the last goal. Right. Holy cow.
Past five players, I think.
Oh, yeah, five players. Yeah, right. Yeah, the two guys. Oh, man, that was brutal. I mean, oh. And, you know, then he just dinks it to Aguero. He was just standing there and kicks it in. That was nice.
It's a weak penalty.
The joke. Oh, yeah, the Liverpool fan saying Sterling goes down easily.
true. Surprise, surprise. True.
Sergio Aguero with a natural hat trick in this match. He was the last person to score a natural hat trick 2 years ago against Newcastle. Absolutely destroys Newcastle. Manchester City own Newcastle. I hate beating up on a side that are desperate for points, but it is what it is. It's a great win. Now, you know, back to 12-point lead. Every time that United play ahead of City, it'll be a 9-point lead, and all the pundits will start to salivate, thinking that this is the miracle run that's coming up. And luckily, City's run starts to ease off a little bit, although we do have Bristol City this week in the semifinal of the League Cup. But Manchester United keep putting the pressure on. So 12 points is a lot, but it's still overcomable.
Did Aguero really score the first goal?
Yes, he did. He said he did.
With his hair.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think the ball moved because of his hair.
I don't know. It was weird because if you look at it, it did. I do think that ball was going to miss wide if he doesn't get to it. I don't think he touched it much, but it was enough.
That was Aguero's 350th goal as a professional in all competitions and international. So congrats to him. Great victory for City after the beatdown at Anfield the week before. Back on track, and hopefully we can take care of business against Bristol City this week.
All right. Your boys. Southampton played Spurs. 1-0?
So, I was watching this one. This was a tough game. The game didn't get off to the best of starts for Spurs. Davinson Sanchez, the big signing from the summer, had an own goal. He really has not been playing well in the last, I mean, you could say ever since Anderweireld went out. He needs that leadership next to him, and he's had a red card in the Watford game, and he hasn't played very well of late. He has all the physical tools, but you give an own goal away from home, and it's going to take a lot to come back to it. Spurs did get Harry Kane, of course, who's one of our own. Got one back not too long afterwards, but I thought Southampton played very well. Credit to them for coming to play. They have a new manager. They probably should have a new manager. Is what I'm thinking. They haven't been playing well of late.
No wins in 10 matches.
But you know what? They came to play today, and they had some of their bigger names on the bench. Like Redmond was on the bench. You know, there are other people they get.
Well, you guys had a big miss on your bench today.
Song. Yeah.
Song, is what you said.
Erickson
was up. So Spurs, there was flu going through the ranks, which really, I think, took a bite into the team. Lloris nor Erickson played, and there were others that were on the field. Pochettino wouldn't say who, but it was clear that there were players that were not 100%. And, you know, these things happen. You know, it's winter. It's cold. It's rainy. You're in Southampton. Yeah. You're in England. These things happen. And so, you know, it's not necessarily a surprise that you get sick. For me, it's just more disappointing that 2 points dropped.
Yeah.
You know, it's Liverpool are playing tomorrow. You know, you can only hope for them to lose, right?
Well briefly on that, and I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Wayne, we got to talk about that.
Just a quick, you know, preview. So we had sickness in the training camp as well, with three foot. Mane was sick, didn't train all week. Not Mane, sorry, Salah, and the other defender, bloody hell, I don't remember his name. But Sturridge is fit. So that was the main thing.
Oh,
so
Sturridge
might even get a game.
Yeah.
And there's rumour of him going out to Seville. to Sevilla on loan because he needs to get playing time if he's going to have a chance of making the fourth striker for the England team.
Who are your four strikers for the England squad?
Well, Harry Kane.
Do you put Carroll in as a specialist?
No.
That's my question.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he'll.
But I mean, like,
I'd like to have him in my wheelhouse. If you get a late set piece, you just send him in.
Exactly.
Send a tail in. Get us a goal.
The mythology grows.
Yeah, I didn't name the third. You know, if Sturridge was the fourth, Harry Kane, Vardy, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Well, the thing is that England is the weakest, and they have been historically is right there at the striker position, and so
But you know, 20th against fourth, I think Swansea have been struggling. I'm predicting a win for Liverpool.
All right. Well, that's all the results. Does anything else?
Real quick to go back to Liverpool. What do you think about Klopp just said Karius is the number one goalkeeper?
Crazy talk.
Yeah, I mean, got to improve that in the summer, right?
Yeah, he's played against. Obviously, he officially said that, and the Everton, City, and this is the third game on the bounce where he's played Karius. Yeah, we're lacking. We need a new keeper. The Brazilian fella.
Yes,
what's his name?
At Roma.
Yeah, at Roma. That would be great. Roma, yeah. And I think that's one of the definite...
Alisson.
Yeah, that's Alisson. His name. Yeah, we definitely need a new keeper.
For the record, third striker for England, most likely, Jermaine Defoe.
Okay, yeah.
The ageless wonder.
Yeah. him over Carroll.
All right, guys, that's about it for this week. We'll be back next week. Obviously, we'll talk about the Swansea-Liverpool game that plays tomorrow at 3 p.m. I'm Andy.
Alex.
Mark.
Wayne.
Daniel. Christian.
Goodbye.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.